Back to the NBA, back to what Dickerson were talking about. We were talking about Kobe and whatnot. I guess let's kind of move to the bubble. We talked about Dallas. We talked a little bit about New Orleans, Utah, Houston. Toronto looked really good. Did Milwaukee win?
Against Boston, you mean?
Yeah. Milwaukee beat Boston 119-112.
What are your guys' takes so far from the bubble? I mean, I think Toronto looks like the team to beat right now. I'll tell you, LA, the Clippers, lost to the Lakers, right?
Yeah.
And then they come back. But then they come back and just boat race. Who did they boat race?
New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans. So, I mean,
they have a, 15-20-point lead?
If I'm predicting the NBA Finals right now, I'm sorry, Makai. I know you're all big on Giannis. If I'm predicting a Finals right now, I'm going Toronto versus the Clippers.
Hmm. I mean, that's not a bad pick. I just, like, Giannis is the best player in the East. I feel like, I know it's not a surefire thing that Milwaukee makes the Finals. I never said it was. I just feel like of all of the teams in the East, they're as good as everybody else, they also have the best player on their team.
Micaiah, here's the problem with the Bucks versus the Raptors. The Bucks have Giannis, and that's basically it. This has been the problem with the Bucks. Giannis is one of the best players in the league.
They have Middleton and Bledsoe, but that's like
game. They don't have much behind
DiVincenzo.
That doesn't count.
Especially Brogdon. Out of their starting five.
They don't have Brogdon. He plays for Indiana.
Okay.
Which is unfortunate. Excuse me. For them, because Brogdon is really big for that.
He took real offense to the fact that they don't have Brogdon.
They were better. The Bucks were better last year. At least Giannis is shooting 30% from three this year, which means, given what he was shooting last year, next year he'll be a league average 3-point shooter.
But anyways, my point is Toronto is the deeper team. And it seems like what Corey's talking about, they're more prepared for bubble play.
You know, Trey Dickerson mentioned that his agent is the same agent that Fred Van Vliet has. Is Van Vliet still with Toronto?
Yes. Yeah. This year. He's a free agent.
It's amazing. It's amazing to me how good he's been in the league.
Now, did Lowry get extended? They were talking about it.
Lowry just put on a show yesterday.
Yeah, he had 33 points.
Well, he just was
there. Wait. 33 points and 14 rebounds?
It's one of those things where I haven't been able to just watch sports, and so I just literally had the games on all day. And I just was like, by the end of the day, I was like a zombie, but I'm like, you know, my sports take.
Sports! 14 rebounds.
My sports.
He got, point guard gets
Lowry
14 rebounds.
Lowry had 14 rebounds.
Lowry had 14
rebounds. How many assists?
Rebounds. And 6 assists. So, 33 points.
He put on a total show.
33 points, 6 assists, 14 rebounds, and a steal.
Yeah, and again, that doesn't even tell a full story because he literally was everywhere on both ends. Right. Alex, your thoughts on favorites right now that you've seen a couple of these, or well, everybody play a couple teams twice?
I think the obvious favorites in the East are Toronto and Milwaukee. I'm not going to put one or the one over the other. I think Milwaukee probably has a little bit more ceiling than Toronto has in the playoffs. I think what Boston's
about,
there.
Yeah, what I was going to say, what about Boston?
You know, people are down on them. Tatum started slow, but, you know, they still got a lot of firepower, too, and I see them being a problem. I thought before the season shut down, I thought Indiana was going to be really good, and they're not going to be now because they don't have Oladipo and I think somebody else, but which is unfortunate, but I don't think Philadelphia is probably going to be in the mix too much. They don't seem to be able to.
I don't think they're going to be in the mix ever.
I don't know.
They bring in there, it doesn't seem like they can really take that next step.
Yeah, it seems like there's kind of some personality stuff going on with them, but I think Boston does have a shot in the West. You know, the Lakers just played really bad. I don't put too much stock in that Toronto game. I think that game could easily do the exact opposite, have the exact opposite outcome. One thing the commentators were talking about that is a big factor is Avery Bradley, who opted out of the bubble, would have been a huge asset to deal with Lowry, and he's not going to be there. So, you know, he's a big defensive presence, and he can shoot the three. And
so, but Avery Bradley is not the player that Kyle Lowry is.
No, I'm just saying to slow him down.
In terms of body style and defensive ability, he's almost perfect for guarding Kyle Lowry, though.
We are going to go to a live cut-in to the Rockets and the Bucks. Enjoy. I'm kidding. We're not gonna do that. They are playing right now. Houston and Milwaukee. What's that?
You got me excited there for a second.
They are playing 81-81. We're on ABC in the third.
Mention that I have noticed in all of this early NBA return action is a lot of not really bad decisions, but guys, shots you would normally expect them to make, missing badly. Have you guys noticed this? Like guys taking contested layups and they just clang off the rim badly.
Oh, by the way, I have noticed that, yes. But like the Mavs game that I really pay attention to, what's weird about that game, that's why it sucks to have lost it. Dallas puts up 149 and loses. That's terrible. To put up 149 and lose.
Well, one thing you got to remember, I think that Houston played terrible on defense for like 90% of that game, and then at the very end, they played like they usually do because they're actually a pretty good defensive team.
But Dallas played terrible on defense as well.
That's the point. It's like if Houston had played like they usually do the whole game, I don't think that scoreline wouldn't have happened, and I think Houston probably would have run away with that game. So, you know, that was a
How do you say they're going to run away with the game?
Because
on like, what basis do you have to say they're going to run away with the game?
If you looked at what happened later in the game, I think that's more indicative of what you typically see from the Rockets.
Okay, but you do realize that they're 6-7 in the West, right? It's not like there's this huge gap.
Yeah, I mean, during the first part of the regular season, it was, you know, Harden was on fire early, and then he kind of went cold. It's going to depend on how he plays. You know, he looked pretty good late.
How the Rockets go.
Yeah, I don't buy the fact that, well, they didn't play. You know, James Harden never plays defense, okay? We know that.
Houston's Russell good, Westbrook, though. They're not a bad defensive team.
Well, I don't
like
think
that's
Dallas
not for them.
I think Dallas can be a good defensive team. I think Dallas is going to be missing Willie Cauley-Stein. I know people, you know, laugh at that. Willie Cauley-Stein's a defender, okay? And not have him inside, that puts a lot more pressure on Boban. It puts a lot more pressure, you know, on, well, everybody. Luka Doncic, Tim Hardaway Jr., Trey Burke, definitely Kristaps. I thought Kristaps should have had the last shot. He didn't get the last shot. It was a Doncic fadeaway from like 35. Terrible shot. They needed to win on that final shot, and they blew it. Now, you say that Houston wasn't playing good defense. You do realize that Dallas is probably the best offensive team in the league this year.
Well, they were ranked first in offense, for sure.
Well, no, I'm asking Alex, though. Alex, you realize that, right?
I think if Porzingis is healthy, I think they are.
Well, he is healthy, though. He played. You're saying, well, Houston didn't play defense. Dallas scored 149 points because they're the best offensive team in the league.
Yeah, but that's not why. That's not the only reason why
they
scored.
Well, let's put this into context. Dallas is playing Phoenix right now, and the score is 73-60 at halftime. Dallas, 73. So they're on pace for 146 again.
Yeah.
So Phoenix. Explain it.
Phoenix.
So we're just going to keep making excuses. When Dallas does it against a good team, well, they weren't playing well. When Dallas does it against Phoenix, well, they're playing Phoenix.
Oh, Dallas only did it against Houston for like the first, you know.
Hey, last time I checked, your name ain't Noah.
Wait, what?
Sorry, go ahead. I got a little upset there for a second. Go ahead, Alex.
He's defensive of the Mavs. He's on the
I don't buy. Listen, they lost thing. Fair and square because they didn't play defense. But to discount their offensive, they made everything. I don't care who you're playing in the NBA. 73 in the first half is a lot of points. 81 in the first half against the Rockets is a lot of points. Micaiah, correct me if I'm wrong on this.
It is a lot of points, but they're playing two bottom five defenses.
Okay. Well, again, let me remind you guys.
They are, look, Dallas right? Statistically, they are the best offense in the NBA. Yes. Personally, I'd rank them second behind Houston, but I think they're definitely top five.
So there's your answer, everybody. There's your answer, what you just said. The top two teams offensively in the league are Houston and Dallas. And what do you know? Those were the teams that scored 153 and 149. Noah?
I mean, I'm going to have to side with Corey on this one. I don't think it's about, you know, the teams they're playing. And obviously, I think Dallas has the best offense in the league. Personally, I don't like the way Houston's offense works. And basically,
it's not about whether or not you like it.
It's all selfish. It's all either Westbrook or it's Harden. Dallas shares the ball. If you watch Dallas, I text you guys about Trey Burke. Trey Burke was like 8 of 8 from three, and you guys were like, "Who's Trey Burke?" Yeah, because Trey Burke. Well, first of all, I knew who Trey Burke was because he played with Tim Hardaway Jr. at Michigan, and he played against Iowa, and I went to see him in person and loved Trey Burke. Say it again.
I know who Trey Burke is.
Oh, I thought by your text response you didn't know who he was.
No, that's not what I was saying. My point was, you know, this is kind of to your point. You don't normally expect a player of his caliber to be going completely off from three-point range and just shooting lights out of the gym.
But that's what that offense does. So you plug and play guys, and whether it's Tim Hardaway Jr., it could be Trey Burke, it can be Porzingis, it can be Dorian Finney-Smith, it could even be a guy like Maxi Kleber. You know, I don't know. I just look at their roster up and down. They don't have a real star-studded roster. Obviously, they have Doncic and Porzingis.
I thought it was Kleber.
Kleber, whatever. Kleber, Kleber. They have a pretty solid...
It's your team, Corey.
I'm not a big Steph Curry fan. I'm a little down on him because he went 1 for 2 from the line there at the end that could have sealed the deal. But Boban's playing well tonight, 4 of 6 from the field with 8 points. I'm not sold on DeLon Wright yet, but he's gotten 13 minutes tonight. So, Alex, rebuttal?
I'm not saying they don't have a really good offense. I just think that I don't see them. Playing defense. Yeah, I mean, if they don't play defense, it seems to me like they're a little bit mentally not very tough to me. And I think Doncic is the leader of this team. I think he's got to be a little bit tougher. I can't really point to a specific thing that I've seen, but he seems a little bit soft to me. And I don't think I think he's got to toughen up a little bit to win in the playoffs, because it's one thing to do this type of stuff in the regular season, but I foresee this being a problem for them. If they allow, you know, points like this in the playoffs, it's just not going to happen. I don't think their offense is going to.
I don't think they'll allow points like that in the playoffs. Let's be honest. And I know, well, this is only 8 games before. I watch these games, and I did watch Toronto, and Toronto looked really good. But some of these teams, it almost felt like they were playing scrimmages. Did you guys watch any of this? It seemed like guys really, not just Dallas, guys just weren't trying on defense. And
yeah, it really did seem like that. Hassan was trying.
Hassan Whiteside. It does. But when you get to the, he's
empty-headed.
When you get to the playoffs, though, that all changes. Am I right? Guys start playing in the playoffs. So I don't know.
I wouldn't take anything you see pre-playoffs too seriously. I think most of these teams are using them as tune-up games more so than actual seeding games.
Well, that's the thing, because Dallas does want to get to that loss. I will say Dallas had reason to play harder in that game. Can we all agree on that? Because here they're sitting in the 7th spot. If they get the 7th spot, they have to play the Clippers in the first round. Ain't nobody wanting to play the Clippers in the first round. You'd much rather play, anybody besides the Lakers or the Clippers. I mean, they had a chance. Denver?
Can we play Denver in the first round? That seems like a pretty decent matchup. I don't think I've never been a Denver believer. I feel like they're a fake. Where are they? 3 seed right now? 4? Where is Denver?
They were a 1 seed last for a long time and never did anything.
Denver is the third.
But Jokic.
Yeah, I feel like Jokic, they're a fake third seed.
Yeah, you definitely want them over either the LA team. So, I mean, Dallas is definitely should be playing for seeding. I might even take them over either
of the 4 or 5 teams.
Who's at 5th right now? It's Utah and somebody else.
Houston's down there. It would be OKC. OKC's 5.
And Dallas looked like they were really disappointed to lose that game the other night. I'm not saying they weren't, but why wouldn't you play a little bit harder? Because they just weren't playing hard on defense. Why wouldn't you play a little bit harder on defense? Had they won that game, they would have been 41-27. Houston would have been 40-25. And although Houston would have still had the better winning percentage, it would have been a lot closer. Dallas has a chance to overtake Houston. It's going to be tough now, though. I mean, with that loss to Houston, it's going to be tough. So Dallas is most likely going to play the Clippers in the first round. That's basically what we're going to see. And I don't think that's going to go very well.
On the subject of offenses,
if they beat them, then the bracket really opens up. What? You want to try it one more time?
You're gonna talk. You're talking to me.
All right,
go ahead, my guy.
Okay, on the subject of offenses, I feel like Dallas has more of an idealized modern offense. I think Houston has gone too far. What they've been doing over the last several years since D'Antoni became the coach the year before Chris Paul arrived, which is like 3 years ago now, I think, they've been pushing their modern style further and further and further, trying to see how far they could go to make it as optimized as possible. I feel like the trade that they made and at the trade deadline pushed it too far. I feel like this year they are destined to fail. Well, I don't think that Dallas is. Honestly, I would take Dallas over Houston in a series. I think they're a better team than Houston right now.
I can see that, but the problem is, how are you going to play?
Houston needed to make a change. They weren't going to win the title as it was. I think they did what they thought they needed to do, but I don't think it's going to end up working for them. I think they've gone too far. About 2 years from now, I bet they rebuild.
Are you comfortable with do you look at Dallas and say, okay, this is a team that in a 7-game series can take 4 from the Lakers or the Clippers playing that type of defense? Or do you think they can ramp it up?
I think they could push it to 6 definitely. 7 is a stretch, but I wouldn't pick them to win. Sorry.
Okay, so
but for against Houston, I think it's a 5-game series. Houston gets hot one game from 3, this becomes unstoppable.
Well, they're not going to play
Houston, 150 points.
They're not going to play Houston though. That's the issue. They're going to play the Clippers. And that was their we are going to look back at that first game of the bubble against Houston and say, man, they really screwed themselves out of an opportunity.
Either the Lakers or the Clippers, like the Mavericks could push it to 6 or 7 games. Houston would get 5 game series because they would have one game where they're hot. In a series between the Mavericks and the Rockets, I think it probably goes 7 games. But I would pick Dallas to go.
Dallas really blew an opportunity Friday night?
Well, yeah,
as
of course.
As far as seeding is concerned.
Of course.
So why aren't you playing defense? You say, well, you ramp it up in the playoffs. Why weren't they playing defense in a game that, I'm sorry, maybe they're not mature enough to look at that and say, mature enough yet. Doncic is really young. Porzingis hasn't been here before. Maybe you're not mature enough to look at this and say, hey, this game is like a playoff game. Because it really was. In a way, they're almost eliminated from. And I don't think they're going to be able to possibly get to that 6th seed because now they're, I don't even know how many games back. Obviously, the winning percentage is what they look at because not everybody's going to play the same amount.
The problem is, in a switch-heavy defensive scheme, it takes a lot of coordination, communication, and timing on the defensive end. And that's one of the first things that starts to deteriorate. It's one of the major reasons why the Cavaliers of a few years ago that had defensive pieces were a terrible defense in the regular season because they just weren't trying. But then come offseason, they had no chemistry. The same thing goes for these teams that have had an offseason that stretched for so long. They haven't been working together on defense and getting these switches down. In a modern NBA defense, that's exactly what you need to do, is make those switches as cleanly, as effectively as possible. They're just not doing that. Give them 3-4 games, and right as we're starting, you know, we got one or two games left of the bubble before the playoffs start, that's when we'll know who really is effective on defense.
Again, Micaiah, the problem is at that point it will be too late. They'll be playing the Clippers, and I don't care how good a defense you play, they're probably not going to be able to beat the Clippers in a 7-game series. The Nuggets.
You're right. The Nuggets, that's what it's going to take to get that kind of defensive rotation scheme down.
Noah, right now, if you had to pick today, who wins in a 7-game series, Denver or Dallas?
They play each other in this series?
Yeah.
I'm probably going to pick Dallas.
I agree. That's my problem. I'm going Dallas or Houston against Denver. Denver did not impress me the other night.
Denver seems to have just like completely forgotten themselves.
How to play basketball?
I think they're trying to experiment a little bit too much is the problem. They need to just focus on what they have now and then continue to experiment over the offseason and work on it next season and not right now when you have a chance to win a championship potentially. Yes, they're a dark horse, but they have a potential to win the championship right now. Now is not the time to experiment.
I agree. Alex?
Denver hasn't had all their guys play yet, didn't they? Didn't Jamal Murray sit out and Gary Harris, I think?
Well, I mean, why? Why are they sitting out?
I don't know, but I wouldn't put too much stock in that if, you know, some of the biggest
points. They look really bad, though.
Yeah.
So,
looking at now,
okay, now as far as one team that we're not talking about that I do think has a chance of being a team that's in the, you know, maybe gets to the championship if they get the right draw and get hot at the right time is Miami Heat. I mean, talk about a team that looked really good over the weekend.
They're tough and they'll play anybody. They are tough and they'll play anybody tough. They've been that way all season long. They made an acquisition in Andre Iguodala that certainly could have helped a lot. I heard he was... Did he end up going to the bubble? I don't remember.
He's there.
Okay. I thought I heard he wasn't going to go for some reason. I must have been mistaken. Anyways, but, you know, they're just a team that they're just very gritty, and they've been that way ever since LeBron left X amount of years ago at this point. It was 14 offseason he left. They've just been tough, defensive, you know, and they muscle you. And even after they got rid of some of their pieces, like Hassan Whiteside, they brought in Jimmy Butler. And personally, I hate Whiteside. I think he's terribly stupid, you know, chronically so. But Jimmy Butler, he's not the most efficient shooter. But he has the mentality that contributes to winning. He just wants to win. That's all he wants to do. But it's at the same time, it's like a Chris Paul kind of thing. Like
he doesn't
Chris
have
Paul's
a
biggest
instinct.
Flaw. Chris Paul's biggest flaw is that he wants to win too much. But he doesn't
I don't like the comparison between Butler and Paul.
Well,
to me,
Paul is a better player.
Paul's a better
but
player.
They have the same mentality.
I think he's a better leader. Butler has not shown to me.
Butler's more of the yell in your face kind of.
Guy, let somebody else speak. You keep cutting off everybody. Let somebody else speak for more than 2 seconds.
We're keeping all this in the podcast, boys and girls. Alex, so let me just run through this. The Wizards lost tonight to the Nets, okay? This is the Wiz, their second straight loss. They have not had a hard couple of games, all right? First of all, in the one game they played in July, they played the Suns and lost by double digits. And now they play the Nets and lose. Jared Uthoff has not gotten a single minute of playing time. He's not even showing up in the box score. Now, Micaiah and Noah, explain to me this. I don't know why this is. But you've got... Sorry, hold on. I'm trying to compose myself here. You've got... you've got a situation, right? You've got a situation where Jared Utah's not even showing up in the box score. Some teams, some players will show up in the box score as DNP, right? Did not play, coach's decision. Why is Jared Utah not even showing up in the box score? I tried to look up something about did he get cut, and I didn't think they could cut guys in the bubble. So why are some guys showing up as DNPs and Jared Utah's not even on the box score sheet?
I'm just going to take my best guess at it because this is a little bit weird, but I'm going to say that there are 13 active players for an NBA team and two reserves. Of those players, of the 13 active players, those that don't play get listed as DNP. The other two don't even get listed in the game, I believe.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 guys are listed on the Wizards box score. Three of them are DNPs, but Utah's not on there.
So he would be 14 or 15 on their depth chart right now.
So I thought
that's my guess. That's my guess.
He's not even an active player.
Yeah. Like he would still be on the roster, but he would be a reserve.
Well, Alex, you explain that. How the heck is he supposed to build a future with this franchise? He's not even getting a chance to play. And they're losing. They're losing. Why are you playing, guys? Why are you playing, Thomas Bryant 37 minutes if you're losing to the Nets?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the Nets game is what annoyed me more because the Nets are terrible. You know, they have KD's out, Kyrie's out, Dinwiddie's out. This team is going nowhere. They probably don't really care about their seeding much because I don't think they can lose their playoff spot. I'm not really sure, but I think they're quite a bit ahead of the number nine.
They'd have to lose it to the Wizards is the problem.
And the Wizards, well, that's it. That's it. They lost to them tonight. So that's
there are nine Eastern Conference teams. The Wizards are the ninth.
So at some point, well, maybe this will be good for Utah. Maybe it'll get to a point where they're completely out of it and they realize it and they'll just start playing guys like Utah.
Corey, Suns, Wizards, which one you got? Which one's the better team?
I'm going Suns because right now Dallas is blowing this lead they had against Phoenix.
By the way,
Noah, your thoughts on why Jared can't seem to find the floor or even get on the active roster?
Real quick, before I get on that, the Suns have three more wins than the Wizards in the season standings. So you made the right choice, apparently. The Wizards are just terrible. As to why Utah can't even make it to the back end of the rotation, I have no clue. It makes no sense to me why you wouldn't give this guy at least a shot at getting some minutes, especially since he wasn't necessarily playing terribly. You know, it's not like he played himself out of the league.
He hasn't even had a chance to play himself into the league.
Right.
If it gets to the point where, again, there's all hope is lost, is there any reason to play Thomas Bryant, Hachimura, Mo Wagner, guys that are clearly NBA players that you've seen enough from, and is there really any reason to play them over a guy like Utah in that situation? Any reason at all?
The only reason I can think of is that they're just trying to get them more reps to continue to improve. That's it.
Guarantee that someone like Hachimura is going to end up being better than Utah, but you know that anyway.
Yeah, but that's
not... To find zero time for Utah is disappointing.
Because these players you're talking about, Hachimura and Thomas Bryant, these are the young guys on the team that need playing time to improve. That's the only reason I can think of as to why Utah wouldn't even make the rotation.
So the Mavs have blown their lead to the Suns. It's a 1-point lead. Keep in mind they had 73 points at halftime. Now they've scored 8 points in nearly 7 minutes.
And they've given up 80 points with 5 minutes left in the quarter.
So the inconsistency is my problem, Micaiah, because they do blow teams out. Like, they were blowing out the Rockets at one. I say blowing out. They were by double digits. They were by double digits in this game. If they can play offensively that well and sustain that, they're not going to lose to really anybody. The problem is when you're not playing defense and you can, it's just impossible to continue with that level of offensive consistency throughout 48 minutes of play. Well, and that's my problem.
Offensive consistency is just a problem across almost any modern offense. Like, not all of them, but apart from the top two or three offenses in the league, it's hard to be consistent. And even for them, they struggle. Like, I already mentioned that I think Dallas is the second best offense in the league. But even they are just, they're just going to have an off night. It's so, the league is so predicated on ball movement and especially three-point shooting at this point. You have a 35% chance to make it. Some days you're going to roll more, you know, more fours than you are going to roll twos on the die. And other days you're going to roll more snake eyes. It just, that's how it works.
Well, I will say, as far as the Western Conference Finals go, hey, Houston is trailing Milwaukee right now, late in that game. And if they were to lose, then they're 41-25. Dallas, if they win, they'd be 41-28. So they're not out of it as far as making that sixth seed. They need a lot to go right, and they certainly can't afford a loss to the Suns.
No, nobody can afford a loss to the Suns, not even the Suns.
And by the way, the Suns have taken the lead, 83-82. So, anyways.
The thing that's going to kill the Mavericks for overtaking the Rockets and the seedings is that they lost the head-to-head.
Well, did they lose the head-to-head, though? I mean, I don't know what the season series was.
I can check real quick.
I know that they beat them at least once, but yeah, you're probably right. Utah, and then Alex, as far as the Nuggets are concerned, Cook didn't get any playing time. He's on the active roster.
Yeah, Nuggets are a pretty deep team. They were missing a couple guys, and we still didn't see Cook. So
that's what my concern was when we previewed the bubble. I looked at Utah's situation as more realistic that he'd play.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the Wizards are down more guys, and they have more of those bottom tier guys that are going to see minutes. I think Denver's a little different story, but honestly, I could see Cook going in there just because of his ability to get boards. I think, you know, Millsap's an old man pretty much at this point. He didn't play well the other night. I could see Cook getting some minutes to give him a rest. And, he's a guy who can hold his own defensively and get boards. And you don't really need offensive production out of somebody like that. So I could see him getting minutes, but yeah, neither of the Iowa guys have gotten any minutes yet at all.
And again, Miami looked really good in that game. 125-105 over the Denver Nuggets. Okay. Anything else anybody wants to bring up about the bubble?
A quick note on the Mavericks and the head-to-head with the Rockets. Including the game they just played in the bubble, they played three games. Houston has won two of them.
Okay.
So Houston does have the head-to-head.
Do they play Houston again for some reason?
I don't think so.
I wouldn't think so either. But
Bucks, Blazers, Lakers, Kings, Spurs, Pacers, Sixers.
So say though, for Dallas?
Oh, wait. This is for Houston.
Oh, let what's that schedule again?
Bucks. Ooh. And that's
That's a loss.
Today. At 8:30, so that game should be on right now.
It's a game going on right now. No, it's still in the fourth. But go on.
Trailblazers on Tuesday.
Could be a loss.
Lakers
lost.
Kings
win.
Spurs
win.
Pacers.
Could go either way on that one.
I'd say probably a win.
Yeah.
Especially the way the Pacers are hurting right now.
Well, Rockets are just trailing one by one right now to the Bucks, and it's 5 minutes to go. So
right, and then the last game of the bubble, the Sixers
win. Yeah, I don't see the Mavs overtaking them, but you never know. Now let's run through Dallas's schedule. Noah, what do they have left?
Give me a second.
They got to beat Phoenix. If they don't beat Phoenix tonight, you might as well just lock them into the seven. I mean, that's just. Am I right on that, Micaiah? They don't beat Phoenix tonight, they're a 7 seed.
Yeah, for sure.
They're the 7 seed. Sorry, I keep thinking I'm in March Madness. They're the 7 seed if they lose tonight to Houston, and they very well could. Right now they're leading 88-87, 3 minutes to go by the time we release this. Of course, we've been staggering our shows, trying to release every couple of – actually, what I did last week, if you guys noticed, I split our show into two parts. So I'm trying to release every few days. That way we kind of constantly have some – rather than a two-hour-long beast, people can listen to it in one-hour segment. So we'll split this one up as well into maybe one-hour increments. But well, Noah,
this
Dallas,
podcast is already how long?
We're at 145, so it could be worse. Could be worse. What does Dallas have left, Noah?
Dallas has, of course, Phoenix. That's tonight. So you would expect them to pull out a win, but it's a close game right now. Kings on Tuesday, so that's a win. Man. Clippers, Bucks.
Loss.
Jazz, yeah. I'd say that's a fairly
probably
even game.
Probably a loss right now if they're playing. Although, Jazz didn't look good either.
Trailblazers.
Yeah.
Back and then forth. They get a repeat against the Suns.
That should be a win. So, I mean, they got a chance. Now, it looks like Milwaukee's going to win this game. They went on a run now. 112-104 now with 3 minutes to go. But Dallas is in a dogfight, 90-90, and we're still third quarter. I mean, again, they're going to have 140 points and lose.
Looking at those two teams specifically, the Mavericks and the Rockets, they've got a chance, but I think the Rockets have a two-game lead plus the head-to-head. So
no, they have
it's going to take
game
a lot.
Lead, but remember, this is going by win percentage. This is not going by how far ahead they are in the win-loss columns, right, Makai? Okay. This is win percentage based on the fact that not everybody will have played the same amount of games.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
So you want to calculate...
The Rockets are 0.631. The Mavericks are 0.588. So the Mavericks have four more losses in the last column and only one less win. So they actually have quite a bit of ground to make up then.
The Suns have went on a spurt now. 96-90. They lead six by six. They still got time. They're going to hit 100 in the third quarter.
What's the split between the 7 and 8 seed, Noah?
Mavericks are 0.588, and the Grizzlies are in the 8th spot with a 0.478.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, there's a big gap.
I didn't know that off the top of my head. I just knew the Grizzlies were the 8th seed. I wanted to know the split.
So yeah, they're definitely not in danger of facing the Lakers in the first round, but still, it's going to be a tough game to face the Clippers.
I'd almost rather face the Lakers than the Clippers because the Clippers, I just think, are deeper right now. If the Lakers lose LeBron, they go from being the number one team in the Western Conference to maybe fringe playoff, if that. They're probably not even a playoff team.
I mean, they still have Anthony Davis.
Yeah, they still have Davis, but I mean...
It's just not the same without LeBron.
I think they go from like 1-6, not 1-8. They don't become the Grizzlies. They have Anthony Davis.
I still think, well, Grizzlies have Zach Randolph. Oh, wait, that was 10 years ago. Alex, so...
That was the Vancouver Grizzlies.
That was Mike Bibby. What's sad about...
Big country.
What's sad about the Iowa Hawkeye players, Utah and Cook, is they're on rosters, and they're not getting time. And then you look over at the Jazz game the other night, and you see Abdel Nader for Oklahoma City gets time at the end, even though it was garbage time, it was time. And you see George Niang playing regular minutes. Again, that's the issue right now for Iowa Hawkeye basketball. Yes, they haven't won a Big Ten title in like 40 years or whatever it is. But issue recruiting-wise, I think a big one is the fact that they can't sell the NBA to recruits yet. Now, hopefully they can. Hopefully Luke is a guy that's going to be after this year. And we're going to finish off our discussion talking about the implications with Luka's decision. But hopefully he's a guy who can help Iowa's recruiting moving forward if he can succeed at the next level. Joe Wieskamp's another guy that's going to have a chance. I think down the line, maybe you see a guy like, I don't know. I don't know if Joe Toussaint is going to be able to get there. I wanted to ask Trey Dickerson about Toussaint. We'll get a chance to do that hopefully in the future. We have him back on the show. But that's Iowa's issue. Abdel Nader, and then Monte Morris, we know, is a regular contributor for Denver. Iowa State, let's be honest, has the edge right now as far as producing NBA players that are actually on teams and playing. Now, again, Utah and Cook being on rosters helps. But when I saw Niang and Nader the other night, I thought, good Lord, that's ridiculous. Nader wasn't even that good of a college player.
So, Corey, quick question. What was the last Hawkeye basketball player to be actually drafted in the NBA and get real playing time?
I would guess that would be Reggie Evans.
That's been a while.
Yes.
So that's how big point. Of a step would it that's be the for point. The Hawkeye basketball program for Luka Garza to say, take another step forward in his game in his senior year and then get officially drafted, say, somewhere in the second round?
Well, it's not a big deal. Listen, the issue is not if he's going to get drafted or not. Let's not forget, Aaron White got drafted, has never even been on a roster. He got drafted in the second round by the Wizards. He's been in Lithuania, and like Trey Dickerson was talking about, he's been in Europe his entire career, okay? Yeah. Adam Haluska, and that was a little bit before Fran's time, but Adam Haluska was drafted, never really stuck. He was with Dallas. He was with New Orleans, never really stuck in the league. You look at a guy like Tyler Cook, he's in the league, but he's not in the league. You look at a guy like Jared Utoff, in and out. He's been in Europe. He's been in the G League. I mean, I can run down the list. Devin Marble, same thing. Had a chance with Orlando, had a brief stint with Golden State. He played for a while in Orlando, but again, never really stuck. You see the theme here? Guys are getting on rosters at some point, but just never seem to be able to push it over that hump.
But could Garza be that player to finally get them over the hump? I mean, he's their first All-American in 60-some years, or consensus All-American.
Yes, because Jared Utoff was an All-American. I would say he can be. He's going to have to work on, like he talked about in today's press conference, he's going to have to work on his lateral quickness defensively. I think that's the one thing that the NBA scouts want to see out of him, is that he can defend ball screens better. You know, at the next level, you have to be able to defend ball screens. He's going to be able to be a little bit more consistent from three. I thought he was a good three-point shooter, but he needs to improve, and certainly his range needs to be demonstrated. He's got that Kareem skyhook. I want to see that. I know players don't use that much in the NBA now, but we've seen it in tape.
It's virtually unstoppable. So if he's got it,
what he's got to do, and Alex, you can attest to this because you followed Iowa basketball, I would assume probably a lot closer than Makai and Noah did. But you know, Luka really dominated guys last year, and he's going to dominate guys again next year. I mean, am I overstating that? Can we all agree and nod your head if I'm right? Luka Garza is going to dominate next year. Yes. He's going to dominate.
I mean, the guy had 26-11 in his junior year.
Every single game. Yes.
That was his average.
Was his average? What was his average?
26 points and 11 rebounds.
Well, I think
26.
Yeah.
I have it right here.
Season, or was that just Big Ten?
How old is he? Does it list his age?
Should be 24. He's been in school 3 years.
I thought it was 24, Makai, or no. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Not his age. You're talking score.
Yes.
It was 26 points per game again in 12 games against AP-ranked opponents. Overall, you're right. It was 24 points.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's going to dominate again. He's just got that. He's got the size, and he's got all the tools to dominate in college. He's just not quite there for the NBA yet. But if I think he's got a few little things to touch up, and if he can increase his foot speed, especially, I think if he can increase his defensive blocking ability, I think he does need to get a little bit better with that for the NBA. And if he can shoot the three a little better. I thought he shot it pretty well, but you have to shoot so well now to be in the NBA as a big guy if you're going to play that role. So if he can do those things, though, I mean, I think he could be that guy. What's funny, I think, is that, you know, Iowa, in my opinion, the reason these guys aren't really making it to the NBA is you tend to have guys that are, they either have the skill or they have the body, but they usually don't have both. It's like Cook had the NBA body, but he never had a skill set. A lot of the other guys are the opposite of that. I think Garza might be able to get by that limitation just because he's going to be playing a position that, as long as he's, you know, you think of somebody like Steven Adams. Steven Adams has a solid role in the NBA, and he's not an athletic guy. I mean, I could see Garza.
He's decently athletic, but his game is predicated off of strength and defense.
Yeah, and, you know, Garza is a better offensive player now than Adams is in the NBA, I think. So, you know, I could see that type of role for him. It's not a traditional NBA type player. You think of a super athletic, you know, guard or forward, but I think he could find a niche there. So if he improves those few little things.
Or he could be like a Derek Favors type of player.
Yeah, he doesn't have the athleticism, though, but he has more offensive skill.
So what if he turns into maybe more of like a 6'11 Porzingis? A little bit of a post-up game, can stretch the floor and be a decent rim protector.
I think it's a little bit fair to be comparing him to Porzingis, because Porzingis, you know, I watched him yesterday on Friday night.
Porzingis is just like a point guard put through a taffy stretcher.
I made the comment, though, on Friday night, Porzingis, 7'3", and he cut like a guard and laid it in like a guard. And I'm just like, holy crap, that guy's 7'3". Are you serious? No, I think, you know, and the guy that everybody likes to compare Luka to, and this is probably the best comparison, I'm trying to think of a guy who's a better comparison, is Frank Kaminsky, a guy who was at Wisconsin and really developed while he was there. Maybe a Tyler Hansbrough. Tyler Hansbrough played a while in the league. Had I think
Kaminsky
like one or
still
two
plays.
Years.
He's not great, but he still plays, I believe.
Who?
Kaminsky.
Yeah, Kaminsky's
yeah,
still
he played
playing.
Really bad though the other night. I think he's on the Suns.
No. Yeah, he's on the Suns. No, but he's playing in the league. I mean, we're not talking about Luka being a star. Frank Kaminsky is a regular player in the league.
I watched him the other night, and I was just cringing because of how bad he was.
Well, okay, you're destroying my point.
I think Luka's got strengths that Kaminsky never had, though.
Did you see Kaminsky in college? Did you watch him?
Yeah.
He was a dominant force. He took Wisconsin to the Final Four.
But did he have an outside shot? Did he
yes.
have... did he shoot as
yes,
well as
did.
Garza from outside? I don't remember that.
Well, Noah, look it up. Frank Kaminsky, college 3-point stats. Noah right. just runs over to his computer. okay, so Houston, Milwaukee, 20.6 seconds remaining, tied 116-116. Yeah. I don't know. Just when you're counting Houston out, they make a push. While Noah's looking that stat up, let's just talk again, kind of summarize this as we're heading towards the end of our show today. Again, we're going to split. We've kind of started doing this thing where if we hit the 2-hour mark, we're splitting these into two shows. So we'll have a part A, part B of this week's podcast. By the way, Houston has taken the lead, 117-116. Are you kidding me? And Giannis just turned the ball over. Your precious Giannis just turned the ball over. And
you talk about him like he's my favorite player.
Well, everything I ever hear, Alex, wouldn't you agree?
I think he's the best player. There's a difference between best player and favorite player.
The best player just turned the ball over and lost the game, because now it's 118-116. Daniel House is to the free throw line. This game's over. Houston's going to win again, and forget the Mavs having any chance at that sixth seed. 119-116 now is the score with 5.5 seconds left. Chris Middleton misses a three-pointer. Giannis the rebound with 5 seconds to go. I'm not watching it, so I'm not giving you play-by-play, but I am following it here through GameCast.
You realize this game will be done when people are listening to this.
Bucks full time out. We don't talk about that, Noah. okay, so what was Kaminsky's as far as his three-point?
In his senior year, Kaminsky shot 41, almost 42% from the three-point line.
There you go.
On 2.6 attempts per game.
What's he in the NBA?
In the NBA this year,
it was
34%. So, league average, slightly growth. Yeah. What was that?
I haven't really watched him in the NBA much. Just the other night, actually, it was the first time I remember seeing him.
That's on because he hasn't done much.
Yeah, he doesn't doesn't look comfortable out there to me.
Honestly, I think Kaminsky's a little bit more athletic than Garza.
I mean, that's the most games Kaminsky has started was in his second year in, I think it was 16-17. He started 17 games, I think. 16.
But Alex, here's the deal. We're talking about Garza. Garza, by most draft experts, was not projected to actually get taken in the second round at all. Okay? So if he wasn't projected to get taken in the second round at all, why are you acting like, well, it's a disservice to Garza to compare him to Kaminsky? Kaminsky's a guy who led the Badgers to a Final Four. He was an All-American, consensus All-American, Big Ten Player of the Year, and he's
a steady NBA player. I got this. NCAA All-Tourney player, two-time All-Region player. 14-15, he was the AP Player of the Year, consensus All-American, got the Wooden Award, Naismith Award, the Rope Trophy? I haven't heard of that one. 14-15, Big Ten Player of the Year, two-time All-Big Ten player. 2015, All-Big Ten Tournament, I believe. It cuts off. And Big Ten Tourney MVP. You think Garza could maybe be a player like that if the Hawkeyes win the Big Ten?
Well, I mean, he's already won Big Ten Player of the Year. He's already won a bunch of National Player of the Year awards. He's going to be the preseason favorite for every National Player of the Year award this coming season. If they play, he is going to dominate, and that's not my opinion. That is fact. He's going to dominate. You look at the guys who are leaving. Xavier Tillman of Michigan State, the guy who gave him the most trouble this year, is gone. He said today that he's staying in the NBA draft. Now, Kofi Coburn, Alex, we know that rivalry that really developed between Iowa and Illinois at the end of last year between Kofi Coburn, Luka Garza, you know, Io DeSumo, Joe Wieskamp, those guys, that is going to continue because Io DeSumo, surprisingly to me, him and Kofi Coburn both announced that they're returning to Illinois. Garza's coming back. Talk about that rivalry. And again, Garza's ability to dominate this next year, he is going to be a force.
Well, I think a lot of what I'm talking about regards to the NBA is more of my ideal of what I think Garza has the potential to be come when he gets drafted. Him right now, yeah, I'm not saying that he's a better player than Kaminsky was going into the draft, but the way that he's been able to improve, if he's able to improve his game, it's kind of like, obviously he's not going to have, hardly anyone has the jump that Garza had from last offseason, but he improved some big glaring weaknesses in his game. I think mainly his strength, his lower body strength especially, was one thing that I harped on a lot about. And he improved that. You know, he's one of the strongest guys out there now. So I think if he improves the other flaws in his game, that's what I'm thinking that maybe he could translate better to the NBA. I'm not real. I remember Kaminsky playing, but I didn't follow him real closely. So I just kind of foresee, it seems to me like Garza's got a feel for the game that most big men just don't have as far as shooting, even putting the ball on the floor. We've seen that a few times where he's actually able to, you talk about Porzingis, we've seen Garza be able to put the ball down a couple times, not very much, but I think if he improves his quickness, you know, that's something that he might be able to take advantage of and maybe develop more of a mid-range game or something that translates better to the NBA like Porzingis. So my thoughts on that is basically I'm thinking of more ideal version of him of what he might be next season. If he doesn't improve those things, then yeah, I'm not super optimistic about his NBA career, but I think if he continues to improve at the rate he has been, or even anywhere close, I think he's got a good shot.
So Corey, to kind of wrap all of this up, being the super Hawkeye fan that you are, I would like to ask you, you're way too early, 2020 prediction as to how far the Iowa basketball team will go. Because, of course, people are expecting, you know, at least Elite Eight, maybe Final Four, well, Big Ten tournament.
Here's my issue.
Finalists and all that.
Here's my issue. I posted on my Facebook account today after the announcement. I shared a Luka Garza post, and all I said was, going to get that natty. In other words, a national title.
Of course you did.
I am not a guy that's going to buy into. They're not national title favorites, okay? That's not. They are a top five team, I think, preseason. Absolutely. I'm buying into that. Corey Kispert and.
I'm not saying favorites, but could they win a title?
Sure. Yeah. But I think a lot of teams, that's the issue. That's my issue with people talking about, well, this is a team that can go to the Final Four. I agree. They have, but let me explain this. Is this a team that can go to the Final Four? Yes. But I would say a more accurate statement for this team would be, this team is a team built for a Final Four run. Okay. To say, well, they can go to the Final Four. Lots of teams can go to the Final Four. We think about some of the UConn teams. Think about Loyola, Chicago. Teams, if they get hot at the right time, almost anybody in the tournament can go to the Final Four.
And that's a big point, because it's March Madness. Things can happen. A team gets hot at the right point, and basically any team can get to a Final
Four. A couple of lucky shots is all it takes.
They're almost a little bit like the Mavericks in the sense that their offense is going to be, I don't think there's going to be a question mark there, but you know, if they can play on the other end nearly as well, you know, they actually have a pretty high ceiling, kind of like Dallas does.
So anyways, as you were saying, Corey, about how they're built to be a Final Four team.
I think they're built because of the experience. I mean, they've got seven starters on this team. Seven guys who have started games. Okay? Seven. I don't think people realize how ridiculous that is. You think about guys like Luka Garza, All-American. Joe Wieskamp was, you know, he's an All-Big Ten type guy. C.J. Frederick led the Big Ten in three-point percentage last year. Jordan Bohannon, the all-time Iowa leader in three-point field goals, has a chance to break the Big Ten record. He's going to be back healthy. Jack Nungy, last year, heading into the season, Fran McCaffrey had said that he was one of the top two or three players on the team. For his ACL, threw his knee out. And he was done. He'll be back. Patrick McCaffrey was a four-star recruit in high school. Had to sit out last year because of residual effects from his cancer that he had to fight off years back that Trey Dickerson talked about earlier on our part one of our show. You know, and then you look at a guy like Joe Toussaint. I think he's, you know, Anthony Cowan of Maryland last year said the toughest guy he had to guard all year was Joe Toussaint. And now think about what another year in the program is going to do for him. You know, and then you have five new freshmen. They're not all going to play. By the way, for our listeners, if you didn't hear this, and Alex, if you didn't hear this, incoming freshman Josh Ogundele, who was over in England, couldn't come to the U.S. because of travel restrictions surrounding the coronavirus, was given the green light. My understanding is he's in the U.S. now. He landed in Iowa today. So he's here now, along with Tony Perkins, Aaron Ulis, the younger brother of NBA player Tyler Ulis. So all of those guys, they're not going to all play. And am I missing somebody in that lineup, Alex? I mean, I don't think I am.
I don't think
so. Oh, Connor. Connor. Oh, yeah. And we all know from our last show how I feel about Connor. I love that kid. I think he's toughest kid on the court. And I think this whole team, yeah, obviously defense, they're going to have to keep improving defensively, because I don't know how, you know, you can go into a deep study, and Noah, maybe you can do this for our next show. Go into a study, Noah, of, and I know people have done this study, because you can probably just Google it, but the lowest, like, BPI, or defensive RPI statistics for a team that won a national title. And as far as, like, Iowa's defensive numbers last year, not even close to the lowest that we have on record, I believe, that has actually won a title. Or at least the title in like the last 10, 20 years or whatever it is. So Iowa's defense has to improve. I don't see them just boat racing teams. You know, they're going to lose at some point if they're not playing defense. But again, I'm also excited about what these freshmen are going to bring. I think you're going to have to play a Gundele. You know, and I'm cool with that. I think they're going to play one of these freshmen. I don't know if they'll play. I'm okay with, honestly, shortening this rotation and saying, hey, Ogundele is going to play. One of the guards are going to play, and let's redshirt the Murray twins. Alex, do they really need the Murray twins this year?
I don't know if they have room for them. I mean, you only have one basketball and five spots on the floor, and you have so many guys. It's kind of like the Celtics kind of had this problem. There's just so many guys where they have the ton of depth, but maybe the five guys on the court maybe are not indicative of the overall talent on the team, you know, because it's kind of a watered down type of thing. So that's presents a problem. I was going to have to figure out, you know, you can't just constantly have guys coming in and going out because you ruin chemistry that you have on the court. So it's definitely a problem. It's going to present a problem, and it's going to be a big coaching thing big coaching year. Another thing is, you know, this team, you talked about them having experience, but they don't really have postseason experience. You know, they have what, first or second round tournament experience, well, but they don't have
neither does Fran McCaffrey.
That's what I'm saying, is as a program, even they don't have much deep tournament experience in the last, you know, decade or so. So that's definitely a big problem, where you have to have teams like Kentucky or whoever else who coaches are just used to being there. You know, to put them as some kind of a favorite in the Final Four for national championship, I think is very optimistic, but they definitely have the talent.
Yeah, Gonzaga, Villanova, they're going to be right there. I think they'll probably be ahead of Iowa. With Xavier Tillman leaving, though, that hurts Michigan State and helps Iowa, I'd say, in the Big Ten. Illinois is going to be really tough. Wisconsin returns everybody. Purdue is going to be tough, as always. I think Michigan, Isaiah Livers is returning to Michigan. You know, and then you look at a team like Rutgers. They're going to be tough. Maryland's always tough. This the Big Ten's going to be loaded again. Northwestern's going to be older. I sound like Fran McCaffrey now. Put a plug in the Big Ten. But no, I think definitely I consider Iowa preseason Big Ten favorites. Can we all agree on that? Preseason Big Ten favorites. Never thought I'd say that, but I would probably say that they're the favorite ahead of Michigan State, especially because of Xavier Tillman's announcement. If Xavier Tillman said he's coming back, I'd say probably Michigan State. I'm going to go Iowa now. Illinois right behind Iowa, I'd say, along with Michigan State. Wisconsin definitely going to be vying for it, though, too. But again, great day to be a Hawkeye. We're thankful for Trey Dickerson joining us on part one of the show. Noah, you got something else to add here?
Since we're wrapping up, I feel like we should let Luca Garza wrap up the show for us. This is a direct quote from his press conference or whatever he stated earlier. After struggling with this for weeks, I found some clarity. It became clear what I had to do. I want to win some championships, and I want a college degree. Hawkeye Nation, how about we run it back one last time?
Attaboy. Well, with that, we will conclude, and obviously we're celebrating the return of LaGarza. We hope we'll get college basketball. I will say good news here, Noah, Micaiah, and Alex. And we've seen the trends dip down. About a week ago, we saw coronavirus numbers as a whole in the country go from 74,000 in one day to 54,000. And we thought that was a huge jump. Well, then it went right back up to 69,000 within a couple of days. I will say, over the course of 24 hours, we've seen numbers go from about 68,000 to 58,000. So they went down 10,000 in one day. That's a big drop. We've got to see this sustain itself. We've got to see the numbers continue to drop. If they go like this, we're not going to get a seven-day average that's indicative of sports being played. So keep social distancing, wearing your masks, and try to get this thing. It doesn't mean you have to live in a box and you can't spend any time with people, but do it safely, please, because this is, you know, you're not endangering yourself. You're also damaging other people in various ways. I know people want to fight over it, but it's just the bottom line. So think about other people and all this. One more thing around the panel. Any changes? It's August 2nd. Let's test the waters here. I haven't college football. Are we having college football this fall? Yes or no, Noah?
I think they're going to try.
So yes, because
yes. I heard that Ohio State was going to try and let in a few fans to some of its games. That's not going to happen.
According to reports last week, the Big Ten said we could still play in the spring. I don't think that's going to happen, but I don't know.
I'm going to say yes to college football and still a solid no on any fans. Yep. Any fans.
They still haven't made a decision, though, have they?
Well.
For sure.
I don't think there's ever going to be like, yes, we are playing. It's always going to be like, yeah, we're going to keep going and that's the plan we have and we'll change it if we have to.
Well, how long have we been saying that they need to make a decision soon?
Well, every show for the past 2 months. Every show for the past month. Alex, college football, yes or no?
I'll stick to what I said before. I think they'll either not play or they'll play and then get cut short.
All right. For Alex Brada, Noah Kruko, Micaiah Kruko, I'm Corey Brada. Thank you for joining us. Week 123 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. You have something to add, Micaiah?
No, I'm just waving bye.
Okay. And again, big thanks to Trey Dickerson. I think we all enjoyed hearing from him, former guest on the show, and we'll definitely try to get him back on here maybe even during the bubble, but definitely leading up into fall and winter sports. Again, we'll follow the story of the coronavirus as much as we can. Keep doing your part. That's all we can do. We can't change the world single-handedly, but we can do our part. So try your best to stay safe and keep others safe during this pandemic. We'll talk to you soon. Luke is back. It's time to celebrate, Hawkeye Nation. We'll talk to you soon. Go Hawks.